We turn to Matthew's Gospel, chapter 2, and the first four verses. Matthew's Gospel, chapter 2. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he that is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and are come to worship him." When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. I've often met people in a muddle over this as Christians, that Jesus was not just generated when he was the Son of God, but he's eternally generated. That is something quite different. And you need to think about it, that the Lord Jesus was generated from all eternity and is generated and will be. He cometh forth from the Father. Now, that is something that needs grasping, because it's very, very important. Because he's always being born. And wherever Christ is born, immediately there is a stir there. Now, you may say, how was there a stir when he was born in Bethlehem? Because only Mary and Joseph were there. We don't know if this incident took place in Bethlehem or Nazareth, because it only took place in those very early years. We just don't know exactly when it took place. Well, how was it then that there was such a stir? He'd never done anything. He'd never spoken anything. He'd never gone anywhere. He wasn't known by people. Then why was all Jerusalem moved? Why did Herod get up to this? When the child had never done one thing. Well, I want you to think about those things. And yet there came wise men from the east, a long way away. We don't know where those wise men came from, but we know it was a long way. The answer is this. Where Christ is, he has an infinite power of attraction. That is why we say he cannot be with his church today, because he has the power to attract. And where he attracts, then men come. Therefore, the fault is neither with congregations, nor preachers, nor anything else. What is it with? It is with the lack of Christ. That is where the problem lies. Now, we need to think about that. Because you think about this. When Christ, if you're his, came into your heart, he caused an immediate stir. He broke up the fountains of your heart, the deeps. He caused you to be very unhappy about your sin. He brought you through wonderfully. How did he do it? Well, how did he cause all this stir? He'd only just arrived. How could he have done it? Well, the feeblest desire for Christ brings an immediate, massive stirring in the life. And you need to think about it very clearly. The moment Christ was born on earth, that very moment he became a mighty force, a force to be reckoned with straight away. And that is true. When Morrison went to China, He worked as a clerk of the China Company. He did it deliberately in order to translate the Bible. He had to hide his translation under his blotter and not let anyone see he was doing it. And yet very soon there were riots, there were children pelting the windows, there was everything going on. Why? Because wherever Christ comes, immediately there is a massive stirring. And that is something that's missing in our land. I was reading the life of Henry Venn of Huddersfield and looking at what happened. And when he sat down and taught in a Bible study, very soon it was crammed with people. And not only was it crammed, but those people went out of the Bible study to church converted. Wherever Christ comes, there is an immediate and huge stirring. And where there is deadness, there is no stirring whatsoever. Something is wrong with Christ hasn't come. Now that's what it happens. The result is that however feebly Christ is preached, immediately Christ is preached, there is a stirring. And you cannot avoid it. And it will happen again. But that stirring has two results. In the hearts of those who want from a distance, they come to worship. In the hearts of those near, they're revolted by it. And they turn away. And what has happened in our land is that we have turned away. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every man to his own way. That's what's happened. And the result is Christ is not there and the preaching and the stirring are not there. These things have to be faced. I've often been amazed as I've read the stories of the 18th and early 19th century of the weakness of the preachers and the mighty results that followed. Quite incommensurate. And I look today at all their learned sermons and all that they're saying and doing and it's getting nowhere. There's no stir, there's no nothing. Why is it? It's because Christ is not present, not born there. That's what's happening. And that needs thinking about very, very clearly indeed by us. Now, there's something else to this, and it needs looking at very clearly. Those men who came from distant lands came earnestly, long distances, and brought the costliest treasures they could to him. Whereas those who came from nearby, really in their hearts, hated Christ. There were the learned, who knew all the scriptures, and had been brought up in the faith, and they had almost no faith at all. There was the king, Herod. You look at them all. So then Christ divides. Christ is like a sword who cuts in two. And he cuts your families. You have people in your families, many of you, who are unconverted. And the reason is Christ cuts right through. And he separates. And he's come to cause division. He said so. I am come to bring division on earth, not peace. And Christ has divided, and he's always dividing. That is why churches full of converted people are always seeking and dividing. And you will find the dead churches remain solidly as they were ever since the very earliest times. I've watched them. I remember watching the Armenian church in the Sudan, and I watched it, and nothing ever seemed to happen there except Armenian parties and feast days, and no one ever stirred in any direction. There was no division or splitting. But if you looked at what the little mission churches were doing among the Nuba and the Dinka and the Shaluk and the others and the northern Sudanese, and there were continually the church moving around and changing, and kaleidoscope it was. You see, Christ brings a division. And that's what he did when he came. Now, don't you think God's ways are strange? I think they are. I think they're, look who believed and came. Now, these men who came are wise men from the East. I want you to think about this carefully. Canon Green, who I lived with for quite a few months, had hanging up in his very simple sitting room, he had about 400 Arab children in every week in his house, and he taught them the gospel. And he was a mighty force among them. He continually taught the gospel to those children and to young people. And they came, they would come from 6 o'clock in the morning to 11 at night. And his house, frankly, it was squash cockroaches and filth. But it was filled with young Arabs. They used to come, and you'd see a girl come, and all her hijab and everything all covered up, and she'd come out of the toilet all dressed in jeans and disappear down the road. You saw a lot of that, and the parents coming to the door, Mr. Green would say to them, "Madam, sir," he said, "I'm nothing to do with this. Whatever your daughter does, she does between you and her." And I've watched him have to talk his way out. Anyhow, hanging on his wall was a picture by Rembrandt, a copy it was, of the Night Watchman. Have you ever seen it? Well, what it is faces peering out of the darkness. It's called a Cherasco effect. And what was there were just these shining faces in the lamplight with complete blackness all around them. And that catches the spirit of the Gospels. We are told nothing about these men. All we have is these four indistinct figures looming out of the darkness at us. And that's all God wants us to know about them. I know that the very earliest pictures of them paint them as Persians. I know that the word is originally Persian, and I know that the Babylonians had very much of these wise men among them, these Magi. But forget the lot. We are not told. What we're told is they came, and what we see are their looming out of the darkness of the world, these four figures, and that's all you're meant to see. That's where Matthew stops, and the rest go silent on these figures. Now, what are they doing? Well, not only have they come out of deep obscurity, but we don't even know what they brought. It's only a guess there were three, because there were three gifts. It's only a guess, a sheer guess, that they came from any particular land. Nobody knows. Forget it all. It's very, very entrancing to go guessing. When you get hold of a commentary on the Bible, you'll often find that much more space is given to guesswork than to the things that they really know. And that's quite often the case with them. Well, forget the rest, and here they are. What we know is that a star brought them. Now, they didn't have a Bible. They didn't have the Word of God. They didn't have the history of the Jews. Oh, I know they may have known of Balaam's prophecy, behold, a star shall arise and a scepter in Jacob. They may have known of other ancient prophecies, I don't know. We're not told. But what we do know is that they came with a star. Now, I have met people who said to me, well, nobody can come to Christ unless he comes with a Bible. I don't believe any of that nonsense. Dr. St. John in Tangier told me that an old shepherd man arrived to him from the mountains. He was a rough-dressed shepherd, and straight from the sheep. And he said, Dr. St. John, he said, I've had a vision. And I saw a man in white telling me to come to you and you would tell me the way of salvation. And that really happened. And I've had people come to me of ideas in their mind, of just wanting out of curiosity to come. Often people are attracted to Christ, because I don't know how God works, by some secret working of God through things they understand and care about. And you will find people come that way. And you will find certain very learned Christians pretend to greatly despise it. Well, let them. They haven't understood anything. People come all sorts of ways, but God attracts them by the way they understand. And that's what he used with these men. They studied the stars. They were astrologers, but they weren't necromancers or anything. These men had a study of the stars. Now, they came to worship Christ. They did not come, like the modern church is coming, to improve its coffers. They did not, we used to be told as clergy, bottoms on the seats will bring you money in the collection bag. I've heard that said by clergy. I've heard it actually said. Don't fancy that as a reason for running any church on earth. Fancy that. It's something horrible. And something which needs putting right. I have heard them say all sorts of reasons why they do things. Moral reasons, social reasons, political reasons. If you went to half the churches in this country today, you would get a politically minded sermon. And the reason is, they've not come to worship Christ, they've come to improve their politics, to make sure that they get their brand of politics through to people. Well, what a waste of time, and what a stupid way to behave inside God's house, and how wicked it is to do that. These men came to worship, and nothing else. They had no ulterior motive, and nowhere else did they go but to Christ direct to worship him. And unless you've come for that this morning, you're wasting your time and ours. You're just not anywhere in the picture. That's why we come here, to worship the living Christ. Now, the only thing that we need to go to do is this. Man is born to worship. You are not the ruler of your destiny. You were born a slave of sin, and you've served sin with all your heart. And now you have been born again in the Spirit of God. You are born to serve. No man can serve two masters. And by saying that, Jesus meant man is born a groveling servant. Man, from the greatest to the least of them, is nothing but a servant. I don't believe all the story about great men and good men and noble men and all the rest of it. Rubbish. Man is a servant. Man can only serve, and he can only bow down. He either bows down to mammon, or he bows down to Christ, or he tries to mix the two, and Christ said ye cannot serve God and mammon. It's hopeless. So then you've got one choice in life. Either to worship God, or worship some stupid idol. Well, idols exist today, and they exist even in Christian hearts. In fact, I would say there are more idols in the Christian church than there are in most of the world. It's a tremendous number. Now, that is where the matter rests. These men came to worship. And unless you've come for that, you are really wasting your time and your days on earth. That's the very clear thing that comes out of this message. Now, I want you to note about these men that a star was guiding them. I don't know how God brings men to faith, and I don't believe any of us know except what is revealed. But I do know this, that men come to faith in strange ways, and these men believed God when they saw a star in the sky, and they came to worship. Don't ask me how. I don't know. But I know this. If you are honest with yourself, what originally brought you to worship Christ? It wasn't something you learnt out of books on doctrine. It was something far, far deeper that attracted you. And that is where it lies. Now, I noticed that they were absolutely earnest. They travelled distances. We have no idea, no method of knowing how far they travelled. But we do know they must have been in earnest, or they would not have undertaken a huge, expensive journey like that. And until people come in earnest, don't expect to leave with anything. Don't expect to take out of this anything more than you brought into it. Don't expect to go away with some gift from God which you didn't provide. The only way, that is why David said, I will not give unto the Lord that which costeth me nothing. What have you brought in costliness to Christ this morning? I don't mean money. I mean far deeper in your heart and life. Well, that's how the matter stood. And they came sensibly. Now, I have against some methods of coming to Christ that they're simply not sensible. I read people tell me all about Pensacola Street and all sorts of things. Well, I'm very unimpressed indeed. What these people did was went to Herod's court, because that's where you'd expect to find a king, in the court. And after all, how many sons did Herod have? I forget, I think 17, didn't he? He had a great string of wives. And the worst of them was Salome. She was and Mariamne was directly descended from the Hasmoneans and the ones who fought for Israel's freedom. But he had a long string of these women, and he had a great long string of children. And it wasn't that. Oh dear. They came sensibly, but they came to the wrong place. They found this wicked old man and this horribly corrupt court. And that's where they came looking. But I noticed this. They were unprejudiced because they came to the Jews. Now, if you were to go out into England today and say, we go to the Jews, they would all say, what about the Arabs? What about the rest of the world? What about the Jews? Well, they're nothing. Some of them would say, we're the Jews. There are all sorts of things that get said to you. Well, let the whole lot go. Don't have rubbish like that in your mind. Get down to one thing. The Jews are there. They're the most hated race on earth. They're the most despised race on earth, and they're the race that nobody wants to have anything to do with. The politicians don't, apart from evangelicals, they're about the most hated of the lot. And yet these men came to the Jews, and things weren't different then. The Jews were well despised. They always have been. Why? God chose them. Therefore, this world, which Jonathan Edwards said, if it could get at God, the unbelieving world would kill God. And that is the simple truth. These very finely dressed and very well looking and smoothly spoken people around us, if they could get at God, they'd kill him. They cannot stand God at any price. And if anyone is the chosen of God, that is enough to set them aflame and angry and willing to do almost anything to the person. And so if you say, beloved, elect of God, elect according to the foreknowledge of God, immediately you arouse every hackle they've got. And they say, oh, you can't say things like that. You see where it lies. They came sensibly and unprejudiced. And I notice another thing about these people. They didn't hang around and dawdle. You are given one youth, one chance to come to Christ. And nearly everybody who comes to Christ came in their youth or childhood. I know few people who've come to Christ late. Oh, I know one Palestinian who told me that he'd led another Palestinian to the Lord who was over 90 years old. But that is a very rare thing indeed. You won't find that often. You're given a chance. Don't dawdle. Don't hang back. Go for it. Go with all your heart after Christ. You see, you've got a life ahead of you, and either you can use the flower of your years for Christ, or you can use the bit of a residue at the end for Christ, and they're not the same thing. Christ knows the difference between giving spent goods to him and giving him what opens a whole life to him to use as he will. You give him all you've got left without another day's delay. And don't you expect to get there. I've met people who say to me, oh, you don't have to talk to me about the gospel. I intend to believe on my deathbed. Do they? I've said to them always, well, then you will never believe. You just won't. That's impossible. You remember that. These men came without dawdling. And then they offered not just gifts, but themselves. Now, their most precious gift they offered was their own allegiance. Oh, they offered gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh, and I know what Oregon said about them, and I know what the early fathers said, and there's some truth in it. Gold for a king. Frankincense just means pure incense. That's all it means. And myrrh from Arabia, from a certain tree. Well, what they did was they took the most precious things their country afforded and brought them to Christ. Now, I want to ask you something. What are you hoarding which is precious? Are you prepared to give that to Christ now? Would you hand it over to him without dawdle, without fuss, just give him your most precious. Well, that's what you have. And if you don't, I prophesy upon you that you will never see much in the way of spiritual blessing in your life. Christ demands the best, the very best. Not giving him the leftovers and the bits. You know, I read a book about the war, about Libya, and the 8th Army fighting across it. And they found that the Libyans had cigarettes, and they didn't. But they found also that they had tea, which the Libyans didn't. And they started off by pinching army rations and getting cigarettes that way. But they very soon discovered a better method. They'd get the old used tea leaves and spread them out in the sun until they were dry, and then offer those to the Libyans. And of course the Libyans in return gave them the worst cigarettes. Those things are self-productive. But you see what I mean? You don't give your worst leftovers. You give Christ something real. The whole of this world is trying to get off with God by giving little bits and pieces. You see what's wrong in the Church of England today? They won't obey him. And so instead of obeying him, they have all this worship and all this goings on. That's what's wrong. And that's the bottom and the top of it. And until they start getting a grip of giving their most precious things, I foresee nothing for them but the wall. That's where the thing lies. You've got to bring the very best you have. You wring your heart and bring the last drop of its blood to Christ. You take your most treasured thing in life and throw it at his feet. That's what they've done. Do you know, one of the missionaries who went out under Hudson Taylor was an extremely wealthy man. Very, very wealthy. C.T. Studd. He was an England cricketer. His father was so wealthy that he had a race course in his own grounds for horse racing. And he went in for it all the time. He was left with his brothers, that estate divided up. He went straight to the China Inland Mission, wrote them a cheque for every penny he'd received, and he was a very poor man in the middle of China, and he gave it away. The English consul came to see him, because cheques had to be sent through him, there was no postal service, and he said, "Mr. Studd," he said, "this is a stupid thing to do." He said, "Hang on to this money, you're going to regret this later." Studd said, "I've done it." Now, God used Studd in China. He had one convert, and that convert was so badly beaten with bamboo rods that he could hardly stand upright, and he encouraged the man to stand his ground even if they killed him. And later on, God called him to the Congo, and he became the missionary in the Congo who, from the mission station he was in, he led great numbers through the missionaries with him to Christ. He started the work in the Congo. Now, C.T. Studd was a real earnest person who gave all he had to the Lord. If you want blessing, go around it like the wise men did. And there's no other way of getting there. Now, I want to turn from that to something very sad. And that is the people who came from near. And you look at them for a start. Now, I want you to notice that the moment Christ came, they were troubled. And you will find today that any sign of life in the Church of God, and the politicians and the rest, are deeply troubled. It's upsetting our way of life. It's doing something we don't want. It's pushing us back into the past. It's bringing a book out to overrule our laws when we're making all these beautiful new laws to allow every form of sin, and this book forbids the lot. These people are a nuisance to us. Wherever Christ comes, you will find immediately there is stirring. And you will find that so. When Spurgeon preached in London, at one time he had to make his way to church through at least a mob of 50,000 who were raging against him, set on by the publicans and the others from the owners of the tenement blocks whose people were getting converted and leaving them, and they were losing money by it. When the gospel was preached in Liverpool, the same thing happened to the Irishman who preached from a cellar. And he only preached from a cellar. He was so wonderful that J.C. Ryle used to attend his ministry whenever he could. And you'll find that that is how things go. That the moment Christ comes, there is a mighty stirring. And we will know when there's revival in this country. They all think revival will bring them fresh power and influence. It won't. It'll bring them persecution. And that's exactly what it'll bring when it comes truly. That's what happened there. Now, I want you to notice that Jerusalem was troubled. And the word means really terrified. Now, the reason they were terrified was once Herod was roused, they knew very well you couldn't tell what the Herods would do next. You see, it went back as far as Antiochus Epiphanes. He'd almost taken Jerusalem 175 years before, and then the Romans came when he was leading an expedition into Egypt and finished him. They stopped him getting anywhere. He was furious. He came back and he hid all his fury. And on a Sabbath day, he killed right, left and centre through Jerusalem. And he killed thousands of Jews because he was angry. And they could see Herod would be angry. And then it had gone on. You look at Jannaeus, who it said of him that he reeked of blood. He was from the line of the high priests. And he killed Jews on every hand. Then you go on. You go on and look at the situation. Herod had waded in blood. Herod wasn't afraid of killing men, women and children, old and young and babies alike. And they knew it. Therefore, the city was troubled, and they had reason to be troubled. And the truth is, we do not know what the world's politicians will do as they see Christ born again. Though we don't know what they'll do, but we have a very good idea that they'll get out every instrument of torture they possess. They'll get out everything they can to crush us. They'll do all the dirtiest, unpleasantest, worst things in the book just to crush Christians. You will find Christians are being driven out of the Middle East wholesale. You will find everywhere where Christians are, trouble follows, and it will follow here. Once Christ is born again. Now, again, I notice far more than just historically they were troubled about it. They were troubled today for the same reason as then. It would upset their lifestyle. Individual Jews, the high priests, the priests, the Pharisees, the scribes, the Sadduceans, and all the rest of them, they had a very good idea that once Christ came, things would change deep down, deep in their hearts. He would cause a revolution, and they didn't want a revolution. They wanted to go on the same as they always had. Now, I've laid before you the situation. The situation's no different today, and the situation's no different in your heart and mine. You have a choice before you, and the choice is clear. Either you come to worship without any strings attached, without hope of anything except that his promises will be fulfilled in you, and if you don't do that, Well, then you take sides against him. He that is not for me is against me, said Christ. Amen.